Our next storyteller is Jinsu Hong. Jinsu and his fan club. Jinsu has spent his career working in education as a teacher, administrator, columnist, and now as an independent consultant. He grew up in Southern California, crisscrossed the country a few times before returning to his favorite city, or as I would say, before coming to his senses, Chicago. You can find him exploring Chicago's restaurant scene, attending a musical, playing tennis, or singing off-key at Show Tunes Sunday, along with all the rest of us, I might add. Jinsu eats Oreos, Sour Patch Kids, and ice cream daily. Please welcome Jinsu Hong. Come on.
Thank you so much. That tall? Not that tall. All right. How do you lower this? A little bit lower. How do you lower this guy? Is it as low as it can go? Yeah, that works. A little bit lower. I'm short. Sorry, I'm really needy. Yeah, that's perfect. All right. So, I think you really need to read this book, my therapist said. Despite being exhausted from matching the energy of a classroom full of sixth graders all day, I was sitting there interlacing my fingers, filled with a nervous energy. It was 2 years out of college, and I had come out to most of my friends, but I still wasn't really comfortable being gay. I remember being confused by my peers who didn't come out of the closet so much as regally strutted out, radiating confidence and a secure sense of self. Meanwhile, I was sending pages of emails to my close friends dissecting the gay relationships in Degrassi, wondering why I wasn't comfortable being gay. Zane and Riley forever, so that's on there. So I found myself in a therapist's office in DC. I took my therapist's advice and read the book. It was a memoir. Like countless gay men before me, I saw myself reflected in the book. The best little boy in the world. Yeah, right? Yeah, for real. The memoir is written by a man who coped with his sexuality and his discomfort with it by suppressing it, by throwing his energy into academics, extracurriculars, and career. I remember cringing far too much while reading passages like the following. Quote, high school was much the same. I was respected. I had some friends. But evenings, I was home writing extra credit reports to keep me on my throne and get me into the college of my choice. And another excerpt. Quote, another important line of defense, the most important on a practical day-to-day basis, was my prodigious list of activities. Highly motivated, a self-starter, the teachers would write on my character reports. Hell yes, I was motivated. No one would expect me to be out dating on Saturday nights if the school paper was going to be on the stands on Tuesday. No one could expect me to be partying over Christmas vacation when I had a list of 17 urgent projects to complete. I would be lucky to find time to open my presents, let alone go to parties or dates, for crying out loud. So back to me. In high school, I overloaded on advanced placement courses, and the only negative marks on my report cards were a few minus signs next to some A's. I was editor of the newspaper, captain of the academic decathlon team, and secretary general of the Model United Nations Club. But no theater, because that was for white people and wouldn't look as good on my college applications. Yeah, according to my parents, at least. Yeah. So I racked up awards and accolades, and if you can't tell, I was super cool in high school. I remember thinking that if I was ever going to come out to my parents, I would have a list of these accomplishments ready, as if to say, look, Mom and Dad, I'm gay, but don't forget everything that I've done. In college, it was much of the same. I graduated with distinction, I was a tour guide, a student ambassador, co-ran orientation, and somehow again, Secretary General of Model UN. It happens. Even as an adult, I kept a full agenda. Up until last June, I was on the 5 boards for my alma mater. I volunteer locally, I write a column, I run communities of practice. Growing up in an Asian household exacerbated this mindset, where it was set from an early age an expectation that I was going to go to a top 10 school. And my mom would tell me about her dreams of me becoming a doctor and me marrying a nice Korean girl and having cute, chubby Korean grandbabies. Well, as you heard from the intro, I didn't become a doctor, and spoiler, I'm gay, so there's also that. And so I didn't marry a Korean wife, but just to be clear. I entered instead the extremely lucrative field of education. Yeah. Woo, pay more teachers, please. And entered and joined Teach for America after college. For those who don't know, Teach for America is a two-year program that places people in high-need schools in the area. So you can imagine how thrilled my parents were. They had given up on their idea of me becoming a doctor, but held out hope that I'd become a lawyer. Well, when I told my parents that I was going to become a teacher, I remember my mom said stoically, "We will support you in whatever you decide to do." But that didn't stop her from emailing me law policy fellowships for the remainder of my senior year, including on the morning of my graduation. She would sometimes call me and just say, "You know, why don't you just consider applying?" And I would say, "Sure, but I'm never going to take the LSAT, which is a requirement." And she responded with, hopefully, and a little bit of delusion, "Surely they would make an exception for you, no?" Asian parents are crazy, y'all. It's real. So teaching was the perfect field for me. I really liked teaching math, and I understand. I didn't fulfill the stereotype that way by becoming a doctor or a lawyer, but I found another way to fulfill it. So I can honestly talk to you for hours about the beauty and importance of sixth grade math. Like, if you only know the formula for the area of a circle but don't know why it works, like, you're missing out because it's truly mind-blowing. Also, there's something really magical about seeing a student grapple with a hard topic like division of fractions and suddenly get it. And I was good at teaching, and my students' test scores reflected that. I also just really liked working with students. Sixth graders in particular are at this really fun age where they still want to impress you because you're the teacher, but they're starting to understand sarcasm and develop their own sense of humor and sassiness. So one of my favorite students was definitely more outspoken. She came into the classroom one day, looked at me and said, "Huh, it looks like you put on some weight, mister, huh?" So the mortified looks on her peers' faces caused her to quickly backtrack and go, no, I'm so sorry. I just meant like you're like juicier now." Yeah, kids are sometimes really honest, and yeah. And yes, I started a diet that night, because, yeah. So it was also hilarious to see these tall girls tower over these boys they had crushes on, while these boys said, "Ew, you still have cooties." Naturally, I knew who had crushes on who based on intercepted notes and eavesdropping on conversations. But more importantly, teaching was the perfect career for me, because there's always more that can be done. Ask any teacher. There's an extra bulletin board that can be made. There's an extra test to grade. You can make the lesson even more interactive. The list is never ending. So I dove in, and what were people gonna say? I cared too much about kids? I wore it like a badge of honor. And it allowed me to deflect questions about sexuality and my lack of dating. Gradually, through the support of my friends and my therapist, I became more comfortable being gay. That proverbial weight was lifted. Friendships deepened as I wasn't hiding a major part of my identity. I told my parents, and we still practice a bit of a don't ask, don't tell policy, and I know they were a bit disappointed. I mean, come on. I first go into education, then I come out as gay. No grandbaby still. I mean, come on. I'm just disappointing all around. But I know they love me because my dad still calls me to chat about college basketball, and my mom texts me to tell me to bundle up when the weather gets cold here. So I'll take it. It wasn't until I moved to Chicago a few years ago when I felt truly comfortable. ShowTune Sundays and Sidetrack Slushies have actually helped facilitate this. If you haven't been, it's really fun. As I became more comfortable, I began to elevate other priorities other than career. More nights out popped up on my calendar. I joined a gym for the first time. I started going on dates. I got hit on. But side note, that happens a little bit too often because someone has an Asian fetish, but I'm gonna save that rant for another day. Save that for another day. Archie, next outspoken, we'll do that one. So being driven had been hardwired into who I was, but I couldn't help but wonder how much of that was because that's who I truly was, and how much of that had just come from compensating. Like, I was and still am a bit perplexed by people who seem to be successful and driven without seeming like they're compensating for something. Like, what drives them? But I still cared deeply about my career, so I kept pushing. But I eased up on the gas a little bit. And part of this is just due to growing older. As I entered my 30s, pulling multiple all-nighters a week just started fading as an option. Yeah, right? I started to understand the law of diminishing returns and that sometimes good enough was okay. Plus, even with a few more nights out a week, my career was on the right trajectory. But then I started to suffer some setbacks. After working in the central office for a school district, I decided to return to the classroom. And despite everyone saying that experience really helps with teaching, my last year of teaching was by far the worst year of teaching. From there, I bounced around the country working for various school districts. At one, I butted heads with the superintendent. And at my most recent role, I thought things were going really well until I was abruptly laid off in July. Prior to my layoff, I had been called into a meeting with the CEO. Just a few weeks prior, I had my performance review with my manager, and it ended with her hugging me, saying, "I hope you know how much we love having you here and how much you contribute to this team, and I love having you on the team." After exchanging some pleasantries, the CEO said, "I'm just going to come out and say it. You're always snacking, you're never in schools, and you're always lying down. You have a perception issue in this organization. And if a principal sees that you're out on a school night at a bar and they just worked a 12-hour day, that's just not going to sit well with them." So I took in that feedback. The snacking thing was weird, definitely weird. And I responded and I said, "You know, I probably also worked a 12-hour day that day, and I've never been late to work, never been late to a meeting, one of the first people here, never did miss a deadline, and have a strong performance review." And he responded, No. It has nothing to do with performance. It's a perception issue." I documented the meeting and sent the meeting notes to my manager on a Wednesday. On Thursday and Friday, I was out of town at a conference. On Monday, the legal counsel and the director of HR called me into their office and told me, unfortunately, due to financial issues, my position had to be eliminated. When I asked if it had anything to do with performance, they said, "Oh no, of course. We would have loved to have kept you. It's just a budget thing." Never mind that budgets were due months ago, and literally my position was the only one eliminated. You know, I always thought if I was going to get fired, it would be because I made a huge professional mistake, like I really screwed up managing a project. Instead, I found myself turning in my keys and my laptop and being walked out the building. It was later confirmed that the CEO was infuriated by those meeting notes, which led to my abrupt departure. My career and trajectory have been such a central part of my identity, so these setbacks really rattled me. I had spent most of my life trying to be the best little boy in the world, and I couldn't help but wonder, now that I was more comfortable being gay, did that somehow negatively affect my drive? Like, is being comfortable being gay and being driven some 6-0-sum game? Like, had I stopped working as hard because I didn't feel the need to compensate for something? And look, I know it's ridiculous. There are plenty of people out there who are able to strike that balance. But again, I'm still a bit perplexed by what drives them if it's not compensating for something. And, you know, sometimes a thought will creep back into my mind, and I can't help but wonder if it's true. I'm now doing some independent consulting and toying with taking another job. As you can imagine, I have some trust issues with managers right now. But for so long, I had worked hard in order to succeed, in order to suppress my sexuality. And then I loosened up a little bit, and then I couldn't help but wonder if all of this success had just come from hiding. Recently, I dropped every board duty from my alma mater when I realized a lot of it was just due to my motivation was just coming from inertia. I had done similar things in college, so I just continued it. It didn't come from some fervent passion for the mission or true satisfaction for my time on it. I'm spending a lot of time now thinking about what it is that I truly want to pursue and chase, because I really want it. At the very least, I want to know what it is. You know, right now I'm still sprinting, but it feels like it's more out of habit and there's not really a clear target that I'm pursuing. Perhaps my true drive will come from a sense of duty. Maybe riches. If you're rich, call me after. And honestly, it's probably going to come from a desire to make an impact. But who knows? But what I do know is I'm not trying to be the best little boy in the world anymore. I'm not trying to rack up activities on my calendar only to suppress something. I'm not doing something, an activity, just to meet someone else's expectations. Like, I'm not trying to be my parents' version of the best little boy in the world anymore. And I don't know if I'll ever bring another boy home to them, but that's really putting the cart before the horse. I'm just trying to find balance in embracing all dimensions of my identity and being okay with being good enough and throwing in some fun for good measure. I'm not trying to be the best little boy in the world anymore. I'm just trying to be happy. Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you. So, yet another ever stylish, outspoken t-shirt. And I want to say that you're still a hell of a teacher, because we all learned some things here tonight. Thank you. You know, the opportunity to learn something is one of the reasons that Outspoken continues to be successful. Thank you. Thank you.